From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm host Evan Dawson alongside producer Megan Mack, and we're going to start with a conversation about one of Megan's very good friends in this town. Beth Winslow is one of the stars in an upcoming show called Church and State at JCC. Have you talked to Beth about this?
I haven't yet, but I'm very excited to talk to her because I just read the script last night, and you'll be hearing about the play later in the podcast, but it addresses a lot of issues going on in our world right now, and it tries to take a lighter tone in some parts. There's some comedic aspects, there's some conversational tone throughout the play. And I think it's interesting because Beth, who, again, is a very good friend, is very opinionated. And she plays a character that is a bit against what she believes sometimes. So it's interesting to see the process that an actor goes through during a production.
Yeah, and the show is, the writers will tell you, and if you heard the full show on Connections this week, it's very personal to them. After the shootings in Sandy Hook, Aurora, Colorado, and elsewhere, the man who wrote the play said, that's it. I've got to put this on stage and at least make some points and try to affect some minds on this. So, yeah, it's funny at times, but it's also very sad at times, and it's meant to be. And what we wanted to do is talk to the man who wrote Church and State, who is?
Jason Odell Williams.
Yeah, he's talking here about what moved him to do this play now. Let's listen.
It goes back to 2007 for me. I went to UVA and then moved to New York to be an actor and a writer. And after Virginia Tech, when that was happening, I remember vividly watching, sort of riveted, the news coverage. In 2007, Virginia Tech is sort of the rival school of Charlottesville. So there were candlelight vigils in Charlottesville, people I knew in Charlottesville that were affected by this. And so it just kind of struck a chord with me, just the fact that something like that could happen on a college campus. I wasn't that far removed from college myself. And I just watched stunned like everybody else did. And then, you know, like we do, you go back to your life. And then for whatever reason, when Gabby Giffords was shot in Tucson, I had a very sort of visceral reaction to it. I don't know why. I can't explain it. It was just something that hit me. I remember my wife at the time saying, like, you know, I was just a news junkie at that point, just watching it all the time. She's like, why is this hitting you so hard? I don't know, and I can't explain that. But I kept thinking, well, now things will change. Something's got to change, right? I mean, if a congresswoman is a victim of gun violence, something will have to change. And, of course, nothing did. And then when Sandy Hook happened, which is, you know, not that far from New York City relatively, and it was an elementary school and just everything about that was so horrifying, I just sort of was like, well, I have to do something about this. There's not much I can do as a writer other than write something. And so I had this idea, and it had been sort of cooking in my head for a while, since probably Virginia Tech, but really since Gabby Giffords. And the idea was, what if something like that happened and it affected a Republican senator instead of a Democratic congresswoman? Would things change then? So that was the germ of the idea. And the first draft, as Ralph will probably tell you, was a very angry liberal point of view.
I call it a well-worded Facebook rant.
a very well-worded Facebook rant. But Ralph was smart enough and kind enough to see something in that and said, there's something here.
And I know for me, when I was reading the early drafts of the play, what struck me so much was how partisan our politics are and our society is, and how people just dig in and refuse to budge no matter what information is presented in front of them. And I thought it was interesting the way Jason put this juxtaposition to say, well, if this happened, would that make anybody change?
Would that change it?
And of course, we're watching the news now, and we're seeing that people are actually speaking out against something that's happening in their own party. And that was something.
Some.
Not everybody. Yeah. A lot of people are still digging their heels in. And I think we have to agree that most people, you know, people are entrenched and they're not going to change their opinions no matter what. But there are people who are starting to question things. And that is something that never happened a year and a half ago when Jason and I started working on this play.
Yeah,
so to watch the stuff that we wrote, well, what if, what if, what if, what if, start to actually be happening in the world makes this fantasy play more of a believable possibility.
Church and State is playing at the JCC Center Stage from October 22nd through November 6th.
Well, the national campaign gave us plenty to talk about this week. In some ways, this ground has been covered, but I thought there was a moment that stood out when we were talking about Donald Trump's comments about women. In particular, Trump has repeatedly used the phrase, I can get away with it, whether he's talking about groping women as he did that day with Billy Bush, or sneaking backstage when beauty pageant contestants are changing clothes, as he said to Howard Stern.
Elizabeth Thorpe is the communications professor at Brockport. Her reaction to Trump's comments includes her views on why Trump still doesn't understand that what he did is wrong, despite his use of the phrase, "I can get away with it."
The problem that jumps out to me most immediately is not so much the sex aspect of this, but the power aspect of it, right? Like, he feels like he can get away with it because he's the owner, or he can get away with it because he's the star. And in the clip that you didn't play, and I appreciate that, where he's talking to Billy Bush, where he talks about how I can do what I want because X, Y, and Z. Like, this is very clearly a dominance issue as much as it is anything else. And I feel like that aspect needs to be discussed as much as the sexualization of these women, because this is about somebody being intimidating, being domineering, being predatory, and it is about imposing someone's will just because they are powerful and they can get away with it. So I think that power aspect needs to be addressed as much as the sex aspect, because when you talk about sexual assault, when you talk about intimidation, when you talk about harassment, these are issues of power intimidation as much as they are of sex.
Let me just follow on this thread with you. People have said it's not clear that he knows there's something wrong. But as you point out, when he says to Stern, "I can get away with that," and when he says to Billy Bush, "Because I'm the star, I can get away with that," is that an indication that he is aware that it's wrong?
He, on some level, knows that he's doing something other people can't. Now, that may mean in his mind he can do it because, and that it's not wrong because he's powerful. So what he knows as wrong or right, that's, I mean, that could be the problem right there. So he feels like he can do it because he's powerful and therefore it's not wrong. But that's what it comes back to, that power issue for me. And I feel like that needs to be addressed, that this is an issue of power as much as anything else.
And now to Hillary Clinton. At long last, we had the chance to read the transcripts of her speeches to big banks. She made millions of dollars through those speeches, which came at a time when she was saying publicly that the greed of big banks crashed the economy. Turns out that in private, she was using a little softer language with the banks, saying that more transparency is needed, but some of the attacks were overblown.
We also heard audio of Clinton speaking to big donors in private back in February. During that conversation, she described her feelings about supporters of Bernie Sanders. She called them idealistic, but also naive about how politics really work. We welcomed a panel of Sanders delegates, including former county legislator Bill Binet.
Where she's wrong is not understanding what Bernie meant by the political revolution. And I think there are even some of Bernie's supporters who don't really understand what Bernie meant by the political revolution. The solution was never electing Bernie. Bernie understood that even if he, with his ideals and his commitment, were elected, he could not get it done unless there is a political revolution in which we, the citizens, become re-engaged in the political process. That's what the political revolution is about and what we need to do in order to bring about the kind of change that we want. I'm not surprised by anything Hillary said, and I'm not really offended very much by anything Hillary said in either this or the Goldman Sachs tape release or transcript, actually. I've expected that from Hillary. That's who she is. She is not going to change. What Bernie has got her to do is to agree to 80% of the Bernie Sanders movement agenda. Now it's our job to make her live up to that. She will never live up to that unless we compel it and unless we turn around the Senate and the House to be able to have people who we support, we move to vote for that kind of agenda.
But you have a candidate in Hillary Clinton who did appear to move to the left, pushed and pressured by Senator Sanders. But a lot of the Sanders supporters said, we can live with this if she's sincere about adopting these positions. She talked about free college. In this transcript, she almost lampooned the idea of free tuition, of free health care. And it doesn't sound like a person who is ready to genuinely adopt most of those positions.
Yeah. Oh, I think she's adopted the positions. I don't think she's a Sanders Revolution type of candidate.
But do you think she'll follow through in office?
Only if we compel her to do that. That's what the revolution is about. She is a centrist, as she said, she's a centrist Democrat.
Center left, center right, she called herself.
Yeah, yep. And I'd like to just, I think she has mischaracterized free education, free health care. Do we call it free roads? Do we call it free police? No, these are services that government provides that we pay taxes for. What she has adopted pretty well, but again, I think we're the ones who are going to have to make her do it, is an understanding that we can't do what we need to do in providing health care, in providing education, because the very wealthy have gotten away without paying their fair share. She now, I think, understands that, but I don't see her doing anything about that unless the revolution becomes a true movement that changes the Senate, changes the House, and forces these kinds of changes to be made.
On Thursday, we had a little thought experiment on the show. What if the United States brought back the draft with a caveat? What if 18-year-olds had to serve a year in the military unless they signed up for some form of community service? That's the suggestion of former Daily Show host Jon Stewart.
Our panel included Keith Gomez from the Seneca Waterways Council and Dave Cuff, who volunteers for many organizations, including the Rochester City School District. Here's how they responded to the idea of mandatory public service at age 18.
I think the decision to call it mandatory is interesting because is it really mandatory if you have options in what you're going to be putting your efforts into?
That's an interesting point.
If you have a variety of options of ways to get engaged and you get to do something that you're passionate about and care about, it feels a lot less mandatory. Going to school and like studying your social studies so you can pass the social studies test that's dictated by the state is very mandatory. But if you get to go pick, that's why I liked the higher grades in high school when I got to start taking more electives and choosing a lot more of my own schedule. It felt less like a chore to go to school, and it felt like I was going and participating in things that I was interested in.
That's a very interesting way to look at it, because you still have to do something if this, you know, compulsory draft of service happens, but you have some options there. Dave Cuff, I mentioned that you volunteer, for example, in School 25 in Rochester. For how long?
That's been going on for about 7 years now. I actually got started through my church, which happens to be a downtown church, and we had a coordinator that basically engaged the city school district. And so along with my wife, what happened was we actually got interviewed by the teachers there. And I work primarily with grades from first through fourth, and I basically help a couple hours a week and go in, help them with reading, help them with math. It's very overwhelming for a lot of those teachers. There's just a lot of kids with a lot of different needs, and to be able to provide some one-on-one attention as well as helping provide some additional skills and sometimes just providing a hug. A lot of those kids, you have no idea the baggage they come to school with every day. When you start to hear about some of it, you wonder, how do they even function? How do they, you know, they have to take a test on something. My God, some of them don't know where they're going to be sleeping that night. It's pretty eye-opening, and I'm glad to have had the opportunity to feel like I'm making a difference for some of these kids and certainly for the teachers that are there.
You know, do you feel like telling an 18-year-old, all right, you're done with school, but you've got to do something for a year. We'll give you this menu of options, but it must be service in some way, maybe military, but maybe public service in various ways. Do you think that's a smart idea?
Definitely I do, because I think in your teen years, unfortunately, most people are very selfish. They look more inward about them. They think about themselves. They don't think about the community at large. I think having these kids have they need to be involved in something, but I like what Keith was talking about earlier, to have options available. But I think they need to be exposed to it, and the more exposure they get to it, and when they start to feel like they're making a difference, I think they're going to want to start doing more because it makes you feel good.
Let's close the week on a high note. You've heard of the Special Olympics, but you probably haven't heard much about unified sports. Unified sports falls under the umbrella of the Special Olympics, but it's different. It brings together high school students, a mix of students who are, some are typically abled, some are students who have various disabilities. And they play sports like basketball, playing real games, real competition with winners and losers.
Michael Saporito is a sophomore at Gates Chile who finally has the chance to compete on real teams. You'll hear from him in a moment, but we'll start with his teammate, Gates Chile senior, Billy Harmon.
I think the best example for us would have been our Pittsford game last year. We played them twice, once in the regular season and once at the culminating event, and I'm pretty sure we got crushed by them the first time. And the second time, we won by 2 points. It was a last-minute buzzer shot that Michael made, actually. So I don't think we would have done so well if we hadn't been so motivated from the first loss. And that competition, the second game, was incredible.
You made a buzzer beater, Michael Saporito?
Yes, I did.
How long was the shot? Was it a put-back layup?
That was my second of my two shots I made that entire season.
Well, you waited for the right time.
Yes, I did. I gotta put on my A game. We're gonna lose this. I don't want us to lose. I mean, we already had a good record. We were like 4-4.
Can you remember, I mean, like, is that moment a blur for you, or can you describe the moment of making that shot?
I got photographic memory. I can remember everything.
So take me through the moment. You make a buzzer beater. You win by two.
So we're in the middle. It's a tie game. Not too long before that, they made a goal on us after I made my first shot of the entire season. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, this is it. I'm going to get that ball, and we got to make that bucket. Now, my rotation was trying. Now, Billy was on my rotation, so we're trying our best. Everyone's trying their best. They're trying to get the ball around, and well, bam, in the bucket. In the bucket.
And then the horn. Kim, you want to jump in there? The superintendent wants to grab the mic. Go ahead.
So, Michael, tell us about the cheers.
Like, I can recall the entire bench. Like, both sides were like, whoo! I'm like, you never get that much excitement. Like, I've been to multiple games throughout, like, the community, like Red Wings, stuff like that. And I've never been to a school event like this before, so for me to be part of the team, it was like, so this is what goes on.
And that does it for this edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
And you can always find us on the WXXI mobile app.
I'm Evan Dawson.
I'm Megan Mack.
You know, I was briefly distracted because I'm looking at all the people who are volunteering for Pledge Drive. So let me not be remiss and mention we're still in the middle of a pledge drive. WXXI.org/give. If you support not only Weekend Connections, but all the work that a great team here at WXXI does. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you Monday afternoon.